You know, I always want, you know, everybody in, to be up to speed with everything, you know, as it relates to the times that we live in, as it relates to the Word of God. And obviously, you know, it's been a no secret that, you know, the issue with Russia and Ukraine over the last several weeks, as the buildup was there and everybody waiting for the inevitable. And as of last night or yesterday, the inevitable happened. And, you know, now Russia has a full-scale invasion into the Ukraine. And I think it's, you know, being a student of history, and which all Christians should be, I think it's so relevant when something like this happens that you're able to put it into a Bible perspective. You've heard me say many, many, many times, and it's a true statement. It's not my original statement, but it is a true statement that, you know, history always repeats itself. And we talk about the fact that the only thing that man never learns from history is the fact that he never learns the lessons from history. Therefore, he repeats the mistakes over and over again. And, you know, we're looking at a time where America, traditionally, as great a nation as she is, when it comes to seeing things that are coming down the road or maybe how to respond to them, she consistently has always been a day late and a dollar short. She never gets ahead of the problem and therefore is always finding herself in a place of catch-up, you know, trying to catch up on the situation. Obviously, one of the great eras of the 20th century was the disaster at Pearl Harbor, which never should have happened. But again, you know, America always takes the route of least passive or most passive resistance and therefore winds up paying the price for it. And, you know, and I think that, you know, it's so important for you and for me to see how history does repeat itself and that we never learn from the lessons of history. The way that you learn what's going to happen in the future is by looking what happened in history. This is taught all the way through the Bible. I mean, you want to get into, you know, the times that we live in and understand them better. Well, what do? You go back through history. As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the coming of the Son of Man. As it was in the days of Lot, so shall it be in the coming of the Son of Man. History is a repetitiveness of man's mistakes that are clearly recorded in the Bible that if we use them, you know, then we're not really surprised not only by what happens because the pattern's already been established, but to the point where you can tell where it's going to go and see where things are going to go into the future. Now, you know, as I said, Russia has had put on a full-scale invasion of the Ukraine. And understanding past history, you know, Ukraine was associated with Russia as part of its country till the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1988. And that's when the wall broke down. And actually, you know, the whole country of Russia, which was an immense country, the biggest continent on the planet of the earth. It's unbelievable as one nation. I know Africa and South America are bigger, but they're all divided up into little areas. Russia is massive. And the collapse of Russia in 1988 to 1991, it got fractured. And it ceased to be the world power that it was up to that point. And all that's found in Daniel chapter 7. If you know where to go in your Bible, we see England becoming the great nation, and then Russia becoming the second great world empire nation, and then her collapse, and then, of course, America becomes the nation that obviously, when you look at it in Daniel 7, will bring in the Antichrist. So, you know, so Russia was fractured. And, you know, it's always been a source of embarrassment for Russia. Russia was such a strong, powerful nation that stood up to anybody and anything and never really ever, you know, gave in to anybody. And suddenly, with the collapse of the Russia in 1988, she lost the world power that she wielded and she had. And it was always been a source of embarrassment to her. That's one of the first things you want to note in Sunday history. When Putin came to power, and Putin is an incredible individual, and I don't mean in a good way. He was part of the Spetsnaz Special Forces back in his day. He was head of the KGB for a number of years, and then he became the leader of Russia. And he's a very hardliner. And he has a desire to make Russia the power that she was once again. Now, I don't care what's going on out there. This is the fundamental thing you want to see. And I want to show you the connection between history and what you have now and how it all repeats itself. When he came to power, he had one desire, and that was to undo the embarrassment of the breakup of Soviet Russia that made her a non-effect nation. He wants the power back to make that nation the great nation that she was. Obviously, the Ukraine was part of that, as was Georgia, as was some of the other states over there that broke off and became their own little country. So he looks for any excuse now as he's done this. And the timing of this is impeccable. And you'll see this in history. I'm telling you, history always repeats itself. So he's looking to justify bringing the nation back under Russia's control. And he wants to do that because of the fact that, again, he wants to make the nation back to what it was. And his plan was to invade the Ukraine and to bring it back to Russia, because even though Ukraine is its own country, because it was associated with Russia forever, there's a lot of pro-Russian people in it, and they have their conflicts almost to the point of civil war with the rebels against the present government. So when you read and hear on the news about there's, you know, 150,000 rebels with the Russian troops, that's the people in the Ukraine that don't want to be under the president that they have. So what Putin did is what he always does, is what they always do. He tests the waters. He sees what he can get away with. And so he moves 2,000-plus troops down on the border, and then he sits to wait to see what the world's reaction is going to be. And after, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks of nobody really doing anything, I mean, there was a lot of talk about it, a lot of saber rattling, a lot of people, you know, but nobody ever came down to stop him in any way, shape, or form. We've got, now I know Ukraine's not part of NATO, but we got NATO, we got the other nations in Europe that certainly know that him taking the Ukraine is going to be problems for them. And yet, nobody stopped him. Nobody really took a hard stand. He watched, I promise you this, he watched before he, and see the timeline of this, he watched before he made any real moves to see what America was going to do with Afghanistan. Once America folded Afghanistan, bailed out in the middle of the night, left all of her allies hanging there, and left the people that for two decades had put their lives on the line, now just walked away from them and said sorry, and then everything, you know, goes from there. When the Taliban comes in and a new government comes in, those people disappear. And it's a thing where he waited to see what America was going to do. And, you know, it's a thing where he sees how many issues we have in America. They look at America. America has come to the place where she's got two fundamental problems on the world stage. One, the enemies that are out there do not fear us. Two, the allies that we have do not trust us. Those two elements come into play here, that he saw what was happening in America, all the problems that we have, how we are a divided country, how that looks like from the outside. It must surely look to him like we are on the brink of going under. and probably we are. He sees all of the issues that has divided us. To him, it's ridiculous for him to see that. He can't comprehend that. You know why? They don't have those problems in Russia. Now, do you know why they don't have those problems in Russia? I'll tell you why, because you protest in Russia on Friday, you're gone by Saturday. In fact, already there were some people in Russia that were had signs that were protesting what was happening. And that's not a good way. You don't have that like you have it in America. So he looks at that in America. He looks at democracy as weakness. He looks at America and all that we have as weakness. The Russians only understand one thing. It's brute power. They only respect one thing, a bloody nose. And they don't respect negotiations. They don't respect somebody sitting down and trying to, you know, negotiate a peace. They have no respect for that. They don't think in those terms. They think in the terms that you saw happen yesterday and today. They invade and they take it. Now, as far as us as Bible believers who know the Bible and we follow its principles, we can see all of this unfolding and how it fits into history and really what's going on. And history is always about the future. And if you want to find out where it's going, go back in history and find out where it's been before. Now, I just gave you a short synopsis of Russia, the Ukraine. Now, I want to hit the rewind button for a moment, and I want to flash back and show you what you're seeing now has already happened almost to the exact same degree. It's uncanny, but most people don't pay attention to history. And Putin's plan is nothing more than a repeat of history that happened in 1933 to 1945 with Adolf Hitler. And if you miss this, then you're bound to keep on making the mistakes of history. And you want to note the similarities. You know, now, I'll tell you right now, the goal of Putin and the goal of Russia is one thing, world domination. That was what it was in the Cold War. I remember as a young kid, Nikita Khrushchev, who came out of World War II and was very influential in the defeat of the Germans in Stalingrad, and he wasn't a soldier, but he was a commissar, and he was over the soldiers. And I remember when he became the president of Russia, or whatever they call their guy, he stood up there, and this is where the Cold War began. Now, for you young people, the Cold War wasn't a war that they only fought in the wintertime. You got to clarify that. It was a Cold War because it never turned hot as far as conflict. There was no battles. There was no nuclear exchange, which was really a fear. It was a Cold War of just going back and forth, getting away what you could get away with, but never coming into armed conflict. And the Cold War actually started at the right after World War II and was all in power up to the 80s. And it was an incredible thing. And, you know, when you go back and see, at the end of World War I, Austria had always been associated with Germany, like the Ukraine has been associated with Russia. Not exactly the same, but it's always been indirectly or directly part of Germany. And after World War I, when Germany is defeated, she loses everything. She has to go through the Versailles Treaty, and the Versailles Treaty was a treaty that took and stripped her of everything. She lost all her land other than what Germany proper was. She lost everything. She was restricted to a 100,000-man army, no Navy, no Air Force. They took all of her industries away from her. And this is what caused the Great Depression in Germany in the 20s and the 30s that made the Depression in America look like a feast. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible thing that happened, you know, to German people. They lost everything. And Austria, after World War I, wanted to come back into the fold of Germany. And, of course, the Versailles Treaty forbid that, and they were not allowed to do that. That was the most embarrassing moment for the nation of Germany that you could ever imagine. Just like the breakup of Russia was an embarrassment for Russia. When the Germans lost World War I and they were stripped of everything, they were taken over to in France, and there was a railway car there that they actually had to go in, and Germany signed the treaty that gave everything to the Allies and lost everything in that railroad car. When Hitler took France, I'm jumping ahead here, Hitler took France and France capitulated and France signed the surrender to Germany, Hitler found the exact same railroad car and put it on the exact same spot and forced the French to come in and sign their capitulation where Germany had signed theirs. It was an absolute embarrassment to Germany and Hitler. And as the German people, Hitler never forgave the Allies for what they did. Now, Hitler was a World War I soldier. He was supposedly a corporal, won the Iron Cross first class, and was gassed in one of the battles there. But after the war, he sees his own country being raped by the Allies. And We think the idea of you know, make America great again was a great thing for Trump to say. That's what Hitler said in 1933. He wanted to make Germany great again. This is what Putin is saying in Russia. He wants to make Russia great again. Hitler saw what was happening. He came to power in 1933, and then through a series of political, military moves and moving everything around. He now comes to be the chancellor, and in time after Hindenburg dies, he does away with the chancellorship and he designates himself as the Führer. He's now the leader of Germany. And he brings his Nazi party in, and they began to take over Germany. And secretly, he tears up the Versailles Treaty, just like Putin tears up every treaty that you'll sign with him. He begins to build an army, he begins to build an air force, and he begins to build a navy. And by the time he gets to 1935, he's now hit, Germany is well on its way. Everybody's back to work, the Depression's over, he's building munitions, he's building planes, he's building everything, and now by 1935, he completely tears up the Versailles Treaty, and now he takes in his great rallies and talks to the German people how that he's going to make Germany great again. And you know what happened with France, Britain, and all of those nations that were the allies they won, and America too? They did nothing. Nobody stopped him from breaking up the treaty. Nobody did a thing. Everybody tried to appease him. He saw that, just like Putin sees it in America, he saw that as weakness. And the comparison between Germany under Adolf Hitler and Russia under Putin is absolutely incredible parallels. He saw the weakness of those nations. So you know the next thing he did? He says, I want the Sudetenland. And if you don't give me the Sudetenland, I'm going to wage war in Europe. Now, the Sudetenland was a little piece of land, like a little buffer zone between Germany and Austria that was created at the end of World War I. Predominantly German-speaking people. So he wants the Sudetenland back. You know what the powers did? They let him have it. Then he said, I want Austria. Austria had been part of Germany in and out. Hitler was born in Austria. He says, I want Austria or I'm going to go to war. You know what they did? They let him take Austria. They let him have it. And in 1939, he goes into Austria, and Austria now becomes part of the Third Reich and ceases to exist as an independent nation anymore. And this is exactly what he did. On March the 12th, 1938, there was no opposition. He goes across the border in Austria. Many of the Austrian people are cheering and lining the streets because they want to go back to Germany. What did France do? What did Britain do? What did America do? Not a thing. He saw that nobody was going to stop him. He saw that he could bully his way through anything that he wanted to do. And so he takes Austria and the Sudetenland. Now we see two men who will rise up that will be parallels of each other, one back in Hitler's day and one in our day today. The one back in Hitler's day was the Prime Minister of Britain. His name was Neville Chamberlain. Neville Chamberlain wanted to appease Hitler. They didn't want another war. They thought wrongly, as we're thinking, that you can take the diplomatic approach with Russia and get results, just like we're thinking you can take the diplomatic approach with Russia and get results. So Neville Chamberlain flies to Germany. He meets with von Ribbentrop, who was his, you know, guy that was over all of the propaganda stuff and all of the stuff around with other countries. He meets with Hitler, and Hitler assures him that if you want peace and you want to end this, I'll tell you what. I've got Austria. I've got the Sudetenland. Give me Czechoslovakia. You give me Czechoslovakia, I'll sign the paper that we'll have no more aggression in Europe. Chamberlain caved to Hitler. And he flies back. You can see it on the history newsreels. He flies back to England. He comes out waving a piece of paper, and he says, we now have peace in our time. I just spoke with Herr Hitler, and they gave, without ever talking to the president of Czechoslovakia, without ever taking, they just gave Czechoslovakia to Adolf Hitler. Nobody stopped him. Nobody got in his way. Nobody said, we're going to unite around you. Hey, all these nations, they had alliances with France and Britain that supposedly, if they were attacked, Britain and France would come an alliance to them and fight their battles. That's what they did back then. Nobody did. And Neville Chamberlain tried to appease Hitler, and he got used. He got taken. Now, the counterpart today will be Joe Biden, who tries to appease Putin. He tries to use sanctions. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the sanctions aren't going to be do something to him, but I am going to tell you this. All we're doing with the sanctions is driving Russia to line up with China. And they're going to get what we're not going to give them from China. And I'm going to tell you right now, China's sitting over here watching what the world and the West is doing when he takes the Ukraine, and she's going to do the same thing taking Taiwan. And it's a thing where everybody looks at the West as being weak. Germany won't do anything. France won't do anything. Britain won't do anything. And we won't do anything. We're just allowing him to go in, let this nation filled with people be destroyed and taken over by a nation and by a dictator who wants to encompass them into his country, and they'll cease to exist as the Ukraine. And you know what? Nobody's going to do anything. We're talking a lot. We talk sanctions like Neville Chamberlain talked peace. Let me tell you something. It didn't work with Chamberlain with Adolf Hitler, and it ain't going to work with anybody that talks to Putin about making deals to have peace. He ain't interested in deals. He's interested in seeing how weak the West is so he can conquer and take what he wants to take. He wants everything back. And if you think he's going to stop with Ukraine, Russia as Germany in 1933 looks to respond only to one thing, brute force. Negotiations don't work. Peace talks don't work. They view that as weakness. You saw it, a glimpse of it back in 62, and I know most of you were not born then, some of us were, with what we call the Cuban Missile Crisis. Russia put interballistic missiles, nuclear weapons, down in Cuba, 90 miles away from Florida. When they were to become operational, Russia and Cuba had a great deterrent that they could launch their missiles from Cuba, hit Washington, D.C., or any place in America in 6 minutes. No time to take cover. Well, JFK wasn't going to let that happen. He called, at that point, it was Khrushchev. He called Khrushchev's hand. And he blockaded that, and he said, you won't go past this line. And it was like Russia and America was in face-to-face, and Russia blinked. She turned around and went back. They made a deal to dismantle the missiles, but it was the hard line, no negotiations. It was, there's a demarcation line. You cross that line, we will sink your ships. We came very close to World War III at that point in time. But it was only the raw power of facing them and not trying to appease them, not saying, well, you can have this or you can have that. It was simply, you're not crossing this line. You remember when Barack Obama, and I forget who it was, Iraq or Iran, he said there's a line in the sand that you will not cross? And then over the next 2 years, he moved that line about 9 times. Nobody respects that. I tell you parents when you raise your kids and train up your kids, how many times do you want to tell your child to do something before they do it? One time. Traditionally, that doesn't happen. It's 4 or 5 times, and then you get into, I'm going to tell you one more time. And then you get into, I'm going to tell you one more time. And the kids learn how far to push you. You think nations don't do the same thing? Sure they do. And a strong show of force with either nation back in 1936 or today in 22 would have stopped them in their tracks. They want to see how far they can go. They want to see what they can get into. Now, during the Cold War, 1945 to 1988, Russia, communism, takes over 3/4 of the world. This is found in Daniel chapter 7, verse 5, when you find the nations emerging after into the modern day period. You find the ancient nations over there in Daniel 2, but then you find the three nations that lead to the Antichrist in Daniel chapter 7. And we see that at the end of World War II, you know, that Russia began a domination. All of the nations, all of the countries in Europe that she liberated from the Nazis in World War II, they all became communists. And communism spread through every country almost in Europe. These were called the East Bloc countries. It also spread into South America. It also spread into Central America. In that time period of the Cold War, Russia, communism, dominated 3/4 of the world. And these guys, in both cases, will only go as far as the weak nations will allow them to go. When Hitler got Austria, then he demanded Czechoslovakia. When he got Czechoslovakia, you know the next thing he did? On September the 1st, 1939, he took Poland. Nobody stopped him. He just went across the border and took Poland. And I guarantee you right now, during the Cold War, Poland was under communism, and I guarantee you Putin is eyeing Poland. In fact, I'll tell you right now, all the Baltic countries over there in the Middle East or the middle of Europe that were once communism, that are now somewhat free from it, they ought to be shaking in their boots, because if somebody doesn't stop him, he's not going to stop with Ukraine any more than Hitler stopped with Austria. And when Hitler got Austria, then he demanded Czechoslovakia. He got that on March the 14th, 1939. And when he got that, then he wanted Poland. He got that September 1st, 1939. And nobody would stop him. Nobody would stand up and say, and by this time, he developed a form of warfare that had never been introduced in modern day or any warfare. It was called Blitzkrieg, which is German for lightning war. And what he did was, here again, history repeating itself. What he did is he took his panzers, his tanks, he put them into a spearhead with good air cover, and then he put infantry behind them, and then he raced through a country with lightning speed, taking it with his tanks, the air cover, and his troops. And he took Poland in 3 days. This is what Putin's doing. For weeks and weeks, how many tanks did we see on the border down there? How many troops did we see on the border? And the first thing he does, he's a little more sophisticated than Hitler was, because he's got a little more tools. First thing he does is take out all the communication so they can't communicate. Then the tanks roll in, the air cover takes out the anti-aircraft stuff, and the troops fall in behind him. And now he comes in from, you know, and everybody was saying, well, he's just going to take this section here and this section here, because no, when he came in yesterday, he came in on a 3-prong attack. He's going after the whole country, and it's a blitzkrieg. And as brave and valiant as the Ukrainian soldiers are, they're way undergunned, way undermanned, and they may put up a good fight, but they're going to lose in the end. And we in the West, Germany, all the nations, France, Britain, America, we're going to stand by and just watch this country be swallowed up in the black hole of the Soviet Union. We're going to scream. We're going to yell. We're going to do exactly what they did. And our Neville Chamberlains are going to do the same thing that they did back in 36. Not a thing. And this is where it's going. Nobody would stop him. They tried to appease Hitler. They thought if they gave him what he wanted, he would go away. They thought if they would give him what he asked for, the Sudetenland, and every time he asked for something, he said, I want nothing more. You can go back and listen to his speeches. He says, give me the Sudetenland, I want nothing else. Then he said, I want Austria. When he said, if you give me Austria, I'm done. He made jokes about, we want no Czechs in Germany, Czechoslovakia. Then he took Czechoslovakia. Then he took Poland. I mean, unchecked power will destroy anything that it touches. And by the end of 1945, at the end of World War II, here it is. Watch. He got Austria. He got Czechoslovakia. He got Poland. Then he went after France. 1940, then he went after Britain in 1940. He didn't get them, but that's called the Battle of Britain. Then he took Norway, then he took Finland, then he took Romania, then he took Sweden, then he took Holland, then he took Belgium, then he took Italy, then he took Hungary, then he took Albania, then he takes North Africa, and then he made his fatal mistake when he tried to attack Russia in 1942. He conquered all of Europe. You know where it started? It started with the Western powers, the nations in Europe, not keeping him in check, not holding him accountable. And so what happened was, by the time he got to Poland and then he attacked France, France fell in 3 weeks. You couldn't stop him. And his goal was world domination. He wanted everything in the world. He created a new Germany to create a new world order that was going to be a thousand-year Reich. Now, look at Russia in the last 60 years. A little different, same pattern. Look at Russia. 1956, she invades Budapest. 1968, she invaded Prague. 2008, she took back Georgia. In 2014, she took back the Crimea. That's down in southern Ukraine. In 2022, now she's attacked Ukraine. She's invaded five or six times in the last 60 years, and nobody stopped her. So she thinks she can get away with it. Now she looks at the West, America, and the weakness, and she says, nobody's going to stop me. She's going to go back after all of the nations that she had when Russia was at her greatest. And Putin will, he'll not stop with the Ukraine. His goal is the same as Hitler's. He wants, right out of Hitler's playbook, he wants to dominate the world. Both men, Putin and Hitler, blame the foreign, their former leaders. When Hitler came to power, he said, the leaders before me, the army generals and the politicians, they betrayed you German people. I, Adolf Hitler, am going to bring Germany back to her former glory and fix those who have betrayed her. You know what Putin said last week? He did the exact same thing. He blamed Khrushchev. He blamed Stalin. He went all the way back to Lenin. And he said, these former leaders have made the tragic mistakes that has led Russia to where she's at. I will fix it. See? Same thing. Second verse, same as the first. History will always repeat itself. And of course, this is, you know, Putin, this is an interesting thing. Putin's favorite character, and he views himself as this, is the great Russian hero, Peter the Great. Peter the Great was the first czar of Russia back in the 16th and the 1700s. He was the first czar of Russia all over the Russian and was a great military leader. These guys look back at that. See, they look at history just like we ought to. He saw what Peter the Great did, and he wants to unite Russia and bring back all of the things that Peter the Great did for Russia. And now he views himself as a modern-day Peter the Great. Adolf Hitler was Frederick the Great, the first great Prussian leader of the German people back when it was still called Prussia. And he fancied him. What did he do? He consolidated the military. He made Prussia a great nation, which became Germany. And Hitler and Putin both blamed their successors, going all the way back to the great ones that made the final, the first things in their nations. And they said, that's who I am. I'm going to make Germany great again. I'm going to make Russia great again. And it never changes. You know, what saved Europe, Chamberlain was the prime minister. Once he comes back and Hitler invades Europe, France, and then after the fall of France, and this is where, if you ever saw the movie Dunkirk, Dunkirk was on the French coast, and that's where the British went in to help the French, and they got slaughtered, and so they get trapped at the beaches of Dunkirk, and one of the great miracles of World War II when the British came and got 600,000 of them off and saved them from going into captivity. But once that Battle of France was over, the Battle of Britain began. And Germany, Hitler, had plans to take Britain. In fact, it was called Operation Sea Lion. He had a plan drawn up. All of the German troops were on the beaches on the shore to invade and conquer Britain. And of course, what happened was, and this is an interesting thing, they dumped Chamberlain and they put in a guy by which we all know, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill was a junkyard dog that was at Hitler's throat all the time. Where Chamberlain failed, Churchill made up for it. Churchill led England through the Battle of Britain. And many, many times, England came close to giving in and falling, but Churchill got them through. Churchill is the only thing that saved England from being part of the Nazi Empire because he was after it. We don't have a Churchill today. We have too many Neville Chamberlains. What we need in this country is a Churchill, somebody that'll grab it. You know, here in its simplest form, here it is. Let's look at planet Earth like a big schoolyard. And we're all students going to school. But as in every school, there's a bully. And that bully is going around in recess, beating people up, taking their lunch money. That'll be Putin. There are people that says, well, I'll try to be friends with the bully, and maybe he won't take my lunch money. He lets you think he's your friend, and he beats you up and still takes your lunch money. Appeasing the bully will never work. Trying to be friends with a bully will never work. The only thing a bully understands is somebody who's a bigger bully than he is that punches him and gives him a bloody nose and says, leave everybody alone. Then he will. We don't have that today. Everybody's scared to death. Did you hear what Putin said yesterday or this morning? He said, if any of you people in these other nations, meaning America, intervene or try to stop what we are doing in the Ukraine, you will be met with the most severe consequences that are unimaginable that you've ever experienced in your life if you try to stop with what we're doing. Now, that's pretty strong language. Now, I know what I would have said back to him, but I'm not the president of the United States. But I'm telling you, that kind of stuff scares people, see? Because everybody's afraid that of what he's going to do. And this country has become such, you know what the Democrats said today? Some of the Democrats said today, this is a terrible thing, what's going on in Ukraine. Because it's taking the focus off of global warming. That's the problem we got. And it's a thing where it ain't going to get any better. Now, I don't know how this is all going to end. Back in the 1960s and the 70s, there was an evangelist by the name of Jack Van Impe. Some of you older people will probably remember Jack. He was an evangelist, and I've heard him preach many, many, many times. But back in the day, he was preaching messages about the coming apocalypse that was coming to America. And one of his messages he preached, I think they didn't have cassettes back then. You had to buy his records. I think we probably still have the records someplace. But one of the messages that he preached was the coming war with Russia. And he goes back to Ezekiel and take Gog and Magog, which are everybody believes is Russia, and how that the great battle there before the battle of the second coming of Christ is actually a world war with Russia that brings about the tribulation period. Now, everybody kind of looked at that back then and said, yeah, well, but everybody kind of thought that it was wrong when Russia fell. Because it looked like that could never happen now. It has never looked more like it could happen than it does right now. Russia is back on the horse. And she is riding into the dawn of the future to make Russia great again. How far she's going to go, what's going to happen, I don't know. I do know this. I can see in history, as I wanted you to see, how that you learn from history, how things never change. Now, I know at the end we defeated Germany, and we defeated, you know, and all of that stuff. I got that. And then the world was free for democracy. Yeah, right. But things are different now, see? I don't see that happening again. There's going to be a new direction here to come out of this. And I'll be honest, I don't know how it's going to go, but I'm telling you right now, it's going to wind up at the second coming of Christ. All that you're seeing over there of history repeating itself, we should be learning by what happened so we can see where it's at, so we can be better prepared to see where it's going. Christianity should never find itself in the state that America finds itself in as being a day late and a dollar short of what's happening. But unfortunately, we do. We never see it for what it really is. We never catch it till it's too late. And now we are running behind trying to catch up with what he's doing over there. And yet we want to talk big, rattle the sabers and say, you know, we're going to do this. We're going to sanction them here. We're going to sanction them there. You know, I mean, I'll show Putin. We're going to take all the McDonald's out of Russia so he won't get any more Big Macs. That's all this is coming down to. He will get everything he wants from China. And the last thing we want is for him and China to link up. And that's where it's going. And if somebody can't see that, then you're blind. The two big bullies on the block are Russia and China. And between the two, they could overrun the whole world tonight if they wanted to. Russia's got more men than we could ever count, and China's got more men than you could ever want to count. And it's back to what it was with Germany. Here it is. Back in 1930, it was Germany and Japan. Today in 2022, it's Russia and China. Some things never change. And of course, if you know anything about the Japanese incursion into Hong Kong and China and those places and Formosa and Burma and the slaughter and the Nanking, and it's unbelievable what they did. And now you're going to see China rise to the power, and she's going to do the same thing. If those two line up, they will shut everything down across this country and across the world. They will dominate. And maybe it's got to go there for the Lord to come back. Maybe the Lord will come back before they do that. I don't know how it's going to play out. But boy, I'll tell you what. You can see the handwriting on the wall. And nobody's going to stop them, just like nobody stopped Hitler in 35, 34, 36. Nobody. They let him do what he wanted to do. They wanted to appease him. And there's no appeasing Putin. They look at that as weakness. And somebody asked me the other day, you know, well, what do you think America ought to do right now? And, of course, my answer to that is I don't think there's anything in America to do because we lost our opportunity to do it. I think we're out of the game. I think all this stuff you're seeing our government doing and everything all they're doing is just like the bus is taking off and leaving for camp and you missed it and you're hanging on to the tailpipe to try to catch up. We're behind the eight ball. We're kind of at his bidding. We're waiting. You never want to do this in a war. You never want to wait to see what the other guy is going to do to you first. That's not how you win wars. You do it to the other guy before he does it to you. It's like Patton said, wars aren't won by you giving your life for your country. Wars are won by you making the other guy give his life for his. And you know, nobody remembers this. Everybody hated Patton. Patton, from the German standpoint, was the greatest general that America had in World War II. And he probably was. He wasn't a politician. He didn't appease anybody. And they got rid of Patton. Some people say that they killed him. I don't know if they did or they didn't. I can understand why they did if they did, because of the fact that of the way he was and what he said. But at the end of World War II, he got stripped of all his, I think it was the 7th Army, the 3rd Army they took away from him, but he got put, completely taken all the armies away because he publicly went on, he says, what we ought to be doing is we ought to be taking all these Germans and rearming them. And we ought to be going after and fight the Russians while we got the army over here to do it. We're going to have to fight them sooner or later. They got rid of him on that statement. He's pretty justified and vindicated today that he was right in what should have happened. But by that time, World War II had turned into a political war. And every war since then has gotten worse. Korea was a political war that there was really never into. You know that there was never an end to the Korean War. We're still at war, technically, with Korea. We just had a ceasefire. Vietnam was a disaster. Afghanistan was a disaster. The Great Gulf War. Everybody thinks we won the Gulf War. Are you out of your mind? We may have defeated this guy and did this, but we're still fighting the terrorists from that war. America has lost its initiative. And so I just want you to see, I want you to stay up on things. I know you hear it all out there, that's good, and that's all fine, but I want you to understand from the Bible standpoint the great principle that you learn from, that history always repeats itself. And what you're seeing right now is out of the playbook from back in 1933. Europe has been one of the bloodiest battlefields in the history of human nature, or human history. You know, we're talking about the Ukraine. Most people do not understand the millions and millions and millions of people that were slaughtered in the Ukraine during World War II by the Germans. They went in and annihilated whole towns. They would go into a town in Ukraine because they were Russian. They'd round up all the women and kids and take them to the church, and they'd take all the men out of the town, and they'd shoot all the men, and they'd come back and lock all the doors and set the church on fire. They murdered millions of them. Millions of them. Ukraine is soaked in blood down through the last 100 years. And of course, you know, when you look at man and his unregenerate nature and what he wants to conquer the world. And that's what this is all about. So I'll leave you with that. Just wanted to bring you up to speed a little bit. Somebody's got a comment or something you want to ask or say, you know, who's got the mic tonight? Otherwise, we'll get into my questions here. We've got the mic. Any comments or questions back here?
When Russia went into Afghanistan in the 80s, and what was their purpose? Can you hear me? Sorry.
Turn him up a little bit. I can't hear him up here. Okay.
When Russia went into Afghanistan in the 80s, for them trying to take over the land, with their failure, did that play a key factor in the fall of the Soviet Union?
You say when they got their independence in the 80s?
No, when Russia went to Afghanistan to try to take over Afghanistan.
Yeah, that mic is all garbled.
When Russia took over Afghanistan, they went in to take over Afghanistan.
Right. Yeah, his question is about Afghanistan. Russia invaded, again, history repeating itself. Afghanistan to Russia was their Vietnam to us. They went into Afghanistan to try to take over Afghanistan. Now, Afghanistan is different than any other nation. Afghanistan is called the graveyard of the empires. Nobody in the history of civilization has ever conquered Afghanistan. Afghanistan is one of the hardest nuts to crack that you could ever try to crack. And Russia went in, gassed them, slaughtered them, tanks, and they still couldn't defeat them. The Afghanistan people are one of the most ferocious, fearless people. If you look at some of the footage, the Russians have T-34 tanks, they have AK-47s, and some of the Afghans have flintlock rifles. That's like Daniel Boone had. And they're still whipping them. And it's a thing where, you know, that was their fall, downfall. And they lost. That was an embarrassment to them. And, of course, they just couldn't conquer them. So they pulled out of Afghanistan, and, of course, that, you know, when they went back to get out of Afghanistan, then after they licked their wounds, then they turned their, you know, when Putin came into power, then, you know, again, he's not looking at conquering Afghanistan. he sees the real issue is making Russia great and bringing back all of the satellites. Now, I said, we had the same embarrassment in Vietnam. We were in Vietnam from 1960, probably, well, I think the advisors were there in 63 and 64. We got into it at probably 65 and didn't get out of it till 77, 78, somewhere in there, 20-some years. And we could have won the war in Vietnam in probably 2 years, maybe less, if it wasn't for the politics. And the politics, you know, destroyed it. It was like Korea. You know, Korea, you know, you couldn't chase the communists back over the border because you couldn't do it. So they were footloose and fancy free, but once they crossed the Yalu River, then you couldn't go after them. They wanted to bomb the bridge that the troops were coming from China into Korea over the Yalu River. You know what they were told? You can only bomb one half of the bridge. You can bomb the bridge on our side. You can't bomb the bridge. MacArthur said, in all my years of warfare, I've never understood how to bomb just half a bridge. Politics. And yeah, Russia got stung in Afghanistan. She thought she could go into those guys and just take them over. Afghanistan's a different nut to crack. They're tough. Like I said, they're not called graveyard of the empires for nothing. Nobody's ever conquered them. And that's why we couldn't conquer them. And we did the same thing Russia did. But the time we're in now, if you notice, going back through history, America has not won a war since World War II. We won World War II in Europe and Japan. We didn't win Korea. It was a draw. We lost in Vietnam, and we're still fighting the war in the Middle East. It's just changing dimensions, but we haven't solved anything. She hasn't won a war since World War II, and that's because something drastically has happened in this country, and that is the fact that, she no longer is the nation that she was would stand up to anybody. Years ago, there was an American missionary in China, and China was going through the Boxer Rebellion, and she hated Americans, and they were killing Americans. This American missionary stayed in China, and when the communist Chinese troops came in, somebody said that they were going to assassinate him. You know what he did? He wrapped himself up in an American flag, walked out to where the Chinese troops said, and dared them to shoot him. They didn't shoot him. Try that today. Yeah, who's got the mic over here? They'll burn you in the flag.
So I was just thinking about, you know, as Russia starts to invade the Ukraine and all of that, you know, how the United States is usually the humanitarian efforts to go and help everybody else. And my mind is going to, as Russia starts to take over and China starts to do their things, you know, do you think that America would be trying to do the humanitarian thing to try to bail everybody out and financially we take that burden?
That's a great question. One of the things going back in history to World War II, when Hitler was doing all of his stuff in Europe, America took the position of being an isolationist nation. They didn't want to get involved in another European war. Britain was standing alone in the Battle of Britain. Churchill was crying out for Roosevelt to help him and get involved. Roosevelt could not do that because America was totally against going into any war. She had been lost, I don't know how many in World War I, and she was not angry, and everybody was saying, it's a foreign war, let them deal with it. And America was in an isolationist mindset. That changed on December 7th, 1941, when the Japs bombed Pearl Harbor. Now, Pearl Harbor to us is a day of infamy and a tragedy. I think probably Churchill probably celebrated it every year after that because he knew we were going to come into the war now and help them. Of course, we got hit on December 7th. On the next day, on the 8th, Hitler declared war on America because he was in alliance with Japan. That's the only thing that got America into the war. And I say that to say this. In a different way, but yet in the same mindset, that's where America is today. We've had our share of war and not winning them. 25,000 boys lost in Vietnam. For what purpose? We walked out of Vietnam and now it was overrun by the communists. We went into the Gulf War, lost I don't know how many young men there, young ladies there, and then to no end because we didn't have the will to win it. We got into Afghanistan and, you know, we pulled out of that, put our tail between our legs and ran out of there, abandoned all of our allies. The people that tried to help us didn't care whether we got them out or not, just so we could get out. And America is in a, I won't say that she's in an isolationist mode, but she's in an isolationist mindset. You don't want to get into another war in Europe. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, this could very easily turn into World War III over there. I mean, nobody's going to stop Putin. And it's just like Hitler. The longer you let him go, the more powerful he becomes. And if China comes in, you see, that was the problem we were faced, again, history. That's the problem we faced with Korea. You know, we kicked Korea's rear end all the way back to the 39th parallel, and it was right around Christmas of 1950 that the American forces had beat back the North Koreans all the way to the 39th parallel, and we captured all that land. And we're celebrating, and all the guys are eating Christmas turkey and everything, but you know what happened? China came into the war. And when China came in, she brought in another 400,000 troops to help the North Koreans. We went on another couple of years there, and it was a bloodbath, boy, when the Chinese got in it. And that's exactly, you know, what's going to happen now. Russia's only, it's just different people. But it's the same thing, it's the same game plan. Russia now is going to take front stage of the world, and China is going to come in and help her. And when those two align, China, they'll do exactly what Hitler and Japan were going to do. Japan was going to carve out her part of the world. Germany was going to carve out hers. Probably at some time that would have happened. Those two would have knocked down, dragged out to come out with a Super Bowl, you know, war of who's going to run the world. Japan carved out her world. Germany carved out hers. And for the time being, they were allies because they both got what they want and nobody could stop them. What you're seeing right now is Russia's doing what Germany did. China hasn't done it yet, but she'll do what Japan did and she'll take back all of the things that she wants and she'll go in and she'll take Taiwan. And then who knows where they're going to go from there. If those two ever get together, nobody will stop them because they're both, in one sense, they're both alike. They're fearless and they don't respect anything. And you know what the worst part about China is? They're Shemites. You don't want to fight Shemites. Shemite has a whole different mindset than Japheth does. Russia's Japheth. China's Shemites. You don't want to mess with Shemites. Shemites in World War II would line up 7,000 and they would bonsai charge you all night long and you'd cut them down 5, 6, 7, 8,000 and they just keep on coming. That's Shemites. The Americans going into the Pacific, they had a tough time. They didn't like the jungle. Too many bugs, too much heat. The Japanese could live in that jungle. They could go for 2 weeks on a handful of rice. They could go on forever because they're Shemites. Back when In America, you had the American cavalry trying to wipe out the Indians. They'd slaughter them. They'd shoot them. And you know what? The Indian would ride up in front of them, take a spear and throw it down. That's like giving somebody the finger today. He'd throw his spear down in the ground and just stand there and dare you to shoot him. That's Shem. You don't want to mess with Shem. We got into Vietnam, we were fighting Shem. You don't want to mess with Shem. There's only one way to deal with Shem. The Enola Gay and Boxcar. Those are the two B-29 that dropped the dropped the atomic bomb on Shem. That's the only way we defeated him. You know, if we wouldn't have done that, you realize that America was faced with invading Japan? Shemites. You know that Japan had already prepared every one of their people, from the little kids up to the old folks, that if they had to fight with a sharpened bamboo spear, they said it would, if America invaded Japan's homeland, which they were going to have to do, America would have lost 3 or 4 million men taking that country. That's why they dropped the bomb. They weren't going to give up. You know why? Shem doesn't give up. Hitler killed himself in a bunker. Shem never would. Shem didn't want to quit. On Guam and some of those islands, when they surrendered at the end of World War II, it was 1968 that they still found Japanese soldiers on Guam and some of those islands 25 years after the war was over that would not surrender, that were still thinking they were fighting World War II. Don't mess with Shem. I'm telling you, man. And it's a thing where they have an ingrained thing in them about warfare. They don't look at it like Japheth does. You know, Germany and Japheth, you know, they look at it, and okay, in case of rain, the war will be held in the auditorium. You know, that's the way Japheth thinks. Shem doesn't think that way. He'll crawl through the mud. He'll live on nothing. He'll eat stuff that'll make a billy goat puke, and he'll come to the place where he'll sneak in while you're sleeping at night, and he'll cut your throat. He'll sleep in under any barbed wire entanglements you put up and never ring a bell. That's Shem. So if China gets with Russia, you got the worst of two worlds, man. You got the bestiality of Russia, the Gentiles, Gog and Magog, mixing up with Shem. Oh, you better call your doctor and get a load of cyanide pills, man. It's going to be something. It's going to be something. Hey, got to happen, man. You see, you know what they're doing in Ukraine? Ukraine was much like Europe. You couldn't own a firearm. Now you know what they're doing? They're passing out AK-47s to every civilian that's there to stand and fight. Yeah, see? But it all comes down to it. It all comes down to lock and load, folks, lock and load. But that's the way it is in the world we're in. And it's going to be wild. But what I wanted you to see is the pattern of history repeating itself. Because that's how you learn. And that's all through the Bible. And everywhere you go, you'll see that you learn what's going to be by what has been. Ecclesiastes says there's no new thing under the sun. And he tells you the revolving circuit of history. And when you learn that, then you learn what's going on. And you don't get caught. You don't get surprised. I was telling people long before he did what he did, what he was going to do. And I'm no genius. I just know how it works in the Bible. I know the pattern. And I know how the Gentile mind thinks. And I know how Russia thinks. And Russia, you know, we always like to put it on Adolf Hitler. And there's no question about the fact that Adolf Hitler was demon-possessed and one of the worst guys in the 20th century. Let me tell you something. He couldn't hold a candle to Joseph Stalin. Stalin, you just didn't read about it. He was our allies. You know why Russia almost got, when he started Operation Barbarossa in 1942, that's when Germany attacked Russia. Russia really had a tough time getting on her feet. Do you know why? Because Stalin had a policy. He was so paranoid that he was going to be overthrown by a coup by his military, that in 1935, and he did it about every 20, 30 years, he purged the army. He took everybody from major down and murdered them. And then he promoted the other people up for 4, 5, 6, 20 years, and then he got rid of them. So when the Germans attacked him, he didn't have a strong line of higher command because he had killed them all. That's Stalin. Hey, all the German soldiers that surrendered, I mean, all the Russian soldiers that surrendered to the Germans, there was like, what, 300,000 of them, maybe more than that, that they didn't kill. But, you know, with all the Russian soldiers that went into captivity with the Germans when they were repatriated and went back to Russia, he murdered them all because he felt like that they had been tainted by the West and they would just be nothing but problems in a pure communistic society. So he killed them all. This is some world we live in, man. These guys are barbaric, man. They will... I guarantee you, when they take over the Ukraine, which they're going to, they'll have a list of who they're going to take. They've probably got the list already. They always do. They did it in Vietnam. They did it in Korea. They did it in Japan. They did it in Germany. And they do it in Russia. History always repeats itself. They'll get rid of anybody who is going to stand in their way. I remember one time when, I can't remember his name, but he was the guy that was over Iraq. Or Iran, I think it was. And he was doing an interview, and he was making light of America with all America's stuff. And somebody said, somebody brought up the gay rights movement. I can't remember exactly how it is. And he laughed, and somebody said, "Do you not have gays in your country?" And he said, "No." He says, "The gay issue and homosexuality has never a problem in my country." And everybody thought, wow. You know why that is? Because they kill them. They kill them. Human rights violation everywhere in these countries, man. And this is why America has lost her punch. I love America. Greatest country still as far as I'm concerned. But I am telling you right now, we're in bad shape because we have lost our punch. We have lost everything. The liberals have destroyed everything that this country stood for. And when somebody tells you that with the Russians invading Afghanistan, or Ukraine, excuse me, and people are being murdered and they're taking over the whole country and nobody can stop them, when somebody tells me that's a terrible tragedy, but it takes the focus off of global warming, I'm out. I'm out, man. I'm out. You got the wrong guy you're talking to. So anyway. Well, we'll hold up there. Didn't get any questions, but I gave you what you needed. Listen, make sure you sign up for Jeffrey. Don't forget the Bible Institute, Saturday morning, 9:30. If the Russians haven't invaded yet. Don't forget the skating party on Sunday. And